Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. Right now, it's just gone 6 minutes past six. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. Thank you so much to Dudu Ramela for standing in for me last week. A couple of developments from my trips around the world. And that brings me to our crazy law or strange law for today. And the strange law comes from the region of Abu Dhabi, the Emirate in Abu Dhabi in particular. It is illegal there to have a dirty car. And this is an effort to ensure that there is a lot of cleanliness around the vehicles, and you could face a fine from the authorities, including them impounding your car, and a fine of up to 500 dirhams, which is around 130 odd or 140 odd US dollars, depending on what exchange rate you are using. Interestingly enough, in efforts to keep your car clean, you are not allowed to wash your vehicle in public places. So you can't have a dirty car, but you also cannot wash it in public places. Very strange laws from around the world. As I said, you're tuning into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest developments from Washington, the obvious conversations that have been on the National Pulse all afternoon, in the media, on X, on every other social platform since we've woken up today. Conversations around President Donald Trump weighing in on South Africa's recent approval of the expropriation bill. We're going to speak to Professor for Economics, Finance and Strategy at Gordon Institute for Business Sciences, Professor Adrian Seville, around the Trump conversation and the Trump positioning of where America is and how that's going to affect the South African landscape. Then we've got a conversation around the mining indaba that kicks off today in KZN. We're going to be speaking to the team at DSS Plus around that, around some of the agenda points, talking points and focal points of the mining indaba for 2025. Then we've got a conversation with the spokesperson for the bidding consortium that put in the bid to list Barloworld for that 23 billion rand takeover bid. It has received approval from the independent board. We're going to speak to the consortium that is putting the bid forward to get an understanding of their plans potentially and what we can make of that deal. We've also got a conversation as part of our tech feature, taking a look at the latest innovation from Apple around their AirPods, turning their tech into somewhat of a health tech solution by catering to hearing impaired individuals. And then we wrap up the show with a personal finance segment, as we do every Monday, around a good debt versus bad debt and understanding what the difference is.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Let's start the show right there with the market update, a sense of how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager and director at Rand Swiss, Gary Boyson, to take a look at some of the market movements. Good evening, Gary. Lovely to catch up. Looks as though markets had a rough start to the month of February, particularly after the positive close that we saw on our local markets in January. But all in all, I mean, equity markets across the world also just having a bit of a rough start to the day.
Yeah, a lot of indices being hammered today. Also, the S&P 500 was down 0.5% on Friday evening, and I think we were playing a little bit of catch up to that as well. So we had the likes of the DAX down 1.5%. FTSE was also more than 1% lower. The CAC in Paris as well, also down well over 1%. The local market fared a little bit better despite the tweets from Donald Trump. The All Share Index finishing 0.54% lower, and that really was protected by the resource index. So resource index finished up 0.86%, and that was driven by the gold miners and some of the resource companies. So we had the likes of Sibanye-Stillwater up 1.28, Goldfields also up almost 2%, Harmony coming out with an update today, that's sending that stock up almost 3%, AngloGold up almost 5% as everyone focuses on gold. And of course, Vodacom also significant in the index, not necessarily the resource index, but also decent trading update and figures from from them, that up almost 6%. So yeah, there were some bright spots in our market, and that did limit some of the damage. But really, where the pain was felt was in the financials. Financials down over 1% today as we digest the trade wars and a little bit of risk off creeps into the global markets.
And for the first time in a long time, when risk off has creeped into the market, we're actually seeing gold perform as the safe haven asset that it's known to be. I mean, reaching all-time highs, we're overly optimistic around the gold miners as well. What's happening in that space on the commodities front? I mean, I saw last week we had a really good run towards the end of the week for platinum and palladium, but gold clearly stealing all the limelight at the moment.
Yeah, so definitely gold. Yeah, currently trading $2,820 per ounce. So yeah, right up at those record highs. And as you say, there's lots of different ways to play gold, and one of them, you know, is through the gold miners. And the gold miners, like I said, we had that update from Harmony today, and it's amazing to see how cheap it is for them to produce it, relatively speaking. So in the Harmony update, we had their AISC, which is their all-in sustaining cost, it's between $960,000. To $985,000 per kilogram. And if you consider, if you take that gold price and you convert it to rand, we're at about 1.7 million rand per kilogram of gold. So you can see there's huge operating leverage there. If you can produce for almost half of what you can sell something for, all of that just drops to shareholders, drops straight to the bottom line. So shareholders can expect dividends. Share prices go absolutely berserk as earnings really improve. So yeah, it's I think an exciting time to be a trader of gold miners, because you get those big exaggerated movements. Of course, it is very leveraged to the gold price, and you know, when the gold price does come off a little bit, you see big falls in the mining shares as well. But I think a lot of interest at the moment in gold, just because it has performed very well over the last 2 years. It typically, for South Africans, it is a currency hedge as well. So you know, picking up either a gold ETF or some physical gold, or even by buying the gold miners, you do get that protection from a weaker currency, and a currency, you know, on the back of this risk off also moving out above 19 this morning. It has strengthened somewhat. So to the dollar, we're at about 18.70 currently, after being above 19 in the morning. So yeah, a lot of excitement around gold at the moment. And of course, you know, over the last couple of quarters, we've seen huge central bank buying as well, which has helped to support prices. And you know, when prices are going up, then investors get a little bit more excited, the momentum builds, they start buying the ETFs have to do the hedge, so they have to go and buy physical gold as well, and it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that it moves higher.
Gary, you mentioned the rand performance, and obviously the rand weakening ever so slightly at the start of the week ahead of where it closed out last week. How much of that has to do with the conversations that are on Truth Social and X and all these other platforms from the 47th president of the United States, and how much of it is just general market weakness around what's happening perhaps in other markets? I mean, looking at the South African picture, one could quite easily look at it and say the market is very reactive and might be a knee-jerk reaction that could self-correct itself.
Yeah, it's always difficult. A market price like a currency, and you know, it's a composite of so many different factors. And we can see all emerging market currencies are weakening at the moment. So, a lot of this, I think, has to do probably more with the tariffs, you know, implemented tariffs, you know, obviously 25% on Mexico, 25% on Canada, 10% on China. I believe there's relief around, you know, energy products as well, and those will only be 10%. But really, I think what's happened is that the market has priced this very market friendly administration in the U.S. coming in, and they've almost forgotten a lot of the Donald Trump campaign promises around tariffs. And of course, this is his second term now. You know, he doesn't really need to cater to the electorate. He can put through some of these policies, and there's, I think this was just a reminder that there's there's going to be quite a wild ride coming up, and as you say, that fear has kind of moved into the markets, affected all emerging market currencies. Obviously, the fact that we had a very specific tweet around the South African environment and potentially pausing all funding to South Africa. You know, that exacerbates the fear. But once you actually drill into it and you look at you know, kind of the funding that we receive from the US, it's not massive. You know, it amounts to $440 million. Yes, so that is big, but in the context of you know, trade between South Africa and the US, it's a little bit smaller. So it's more the perception that things are getting more risky. Obviously, there's kind of a subtle threat around the renewal of the AGOA. The AGOA agreements that will come in September of 2025. And, you know, it really comes down to how much of this can you believe and how much of this is posturing by the Trump administration. And it's something that I think we mentioned in one of the first shows of the year, that this year investors need to expect these sensationalist headlines coming out regularly, and the market needs to learn to take them in their stride, because this is not going to be the last type of announcement like this. There's going to be these big headline-grabbing announcements that are going to almost be designed to spook markets, and it's interesting to see how markets react to that. So initially, as you know, as the US market opened today, we were down almost 2% on the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, but we've quickly recovered and we're only down around 0.5% at the moment. So you get the sense that the market is taking a lot of this in its stride. But yeah, absolutely, I think it will be a factor, but I don't think it's the driving factor today. And I think also with the resource index being up and our currency so linked to commodity counters and commodity exports, the correlation between commodity prices and the South African rand exchange rate, specifically the dollar rand exchange rate, is very, very high. So with the resource index lifting, I think that's mitigated a lot of the pressure that might have been felt on the currency. And again, we've also got to factor in things like we had load shedding this weekend. So there's a lot of negative news that I think the market is trying to digest at the moment. But given where we are currently, I think the market is taking this in its stride. It could have been a lot worse, but I think everyone is taking a wait and see approach, and you don't get the sense that it's panic stations just yet.
Buckle up, folks. We're going to be in this kind of environment until 2029. We'll leave the conversation there, Gary. Thanks so much for the time, as always. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager and Director at Rand Swiss, on some of the market movements today, some of the production updates that came out by some of the South African companies, and where we all stand.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Speaking of where we all stand, we obviously have been keeping an eye on the conversations that have been happening from Washington, from Pretoria, from the Union Buildings, or I'd imagine in this case it potentially could be Cape Town as well, about the, I say post, because we can't say tweet anymore, but the post on Truth Social and other social platforms from Donald J. Trump around South Africa and where he stands from the positioning of the expropriation bill that was passed by our president. I'm joined on the line by a professor at Gordon Institute for Business Sciences. That's the Professor for Economics, Finance and Strategy, of course, Professor Adrian Saville, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of any of it. Good evening, Prof. Lovely to catch up with you as always. I think every time you and I speak, it's never really about something that's calm. It's always about chaos that's happening. And this time the chaos, I mean, expectedly so, I suppose, is from the President of the United States.
Yeah, well, you know, let's start here. What day is it?
Monday.
And social has a whole lot to say about Mondays and what the U.S. president has to say on Mondays. So, you know, maybe we can, you know, poke a little bit of fun back, you know, into what is a very serious matter. And, you know, it's not what shouldn't be lost on us is notwithstanding what Donald Trump is saying about the matter, you know, what we should really be focusing on is what it means for South Africa. Mm. You know, and here I would take my hat off to the presidency, which has taken an incredibly sober and mature stance, clear communication to try and sort of smooth ruffled feathers and inject sanity into a very, very heated debate. The one thing, you know, Trump is world-class at is polarizing. And, you know, here we have Exhibit A.
How do we prepare for that, Prof, when we look at the state of geopolitics, the state of economics, the state of how interconnected the world is? You cannot, I imagine, have a president that is allowed to say such sweeping statements at any time, on any platform he deems necessary, not in official communications, and that have an effect on the markets, on how people are perceiving certain situations. Now, there's a whole separate debate that we can have around the signing of the expropriation bill, whether or not it was
absolutely
right.
And
that's a separate conversation.
Yeah.
But
different
we're looking at the fact that one president can wake up and unilaterally decide that he wants to take this particular stance, true or not, and that is a very dangerous amount of power for one president to have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying this back to you cheekily, but you're saying we can't have, well, you know, who said we can't have this? That's what the U.S. Electorate voted into power. They voted Trump into power on the back of, you know, some very bold claims. And he is, if anything, you know, at least living up to those claims, if not exceeding them. He's been vocal. He's been strident. In some ways, it's surreal that it's only 2 weeks since he was sworn in. You know, and look at what he has ushered in the space of these 2 weeks. The one thing that that shouldn't be lost on us is the stones and glass houses story that's going on here, because, you know, in his social statement, he's, you know, he's outraged, but at the same time he has imposed tariffs. 10%, 20%, 25%. I've done some back of the envelope modeling in trying to work out what the impact is on the US economy. And my fairly sober guesstimate is that it will add 2.5% inflation. Now, the person who pays for inflation ultimately is the consumer. And so what has been confiscated from the consumer, and I'm underlining that word confiscated because, you know, that's his outrage about South Africa's stance. What he has effectively quietly confiscated from the consumer's pocket is 2.5% of the U.S. economy, based on, you know, some very crude back of the envelope modeling. But there's a lot of stone throwing going on in the glass house here.
Speaking of that stone throwing, how do we reconcile that with the rest of the geopolitical events that are happening? I mean, President Trump has been very vocal about a number of things around the world and very quiet about some of them, promising to end certain wars, if I remember correctly, before taking office. And since then, I believe the Russia-Ukraine war is still ongoing. The war in Gaza is still kind of working itself out, but also not completely ceased. So clearly, some promises are more important than others, and the rest of the world is left to figure out what matters most, I suppose.
Yeah, Jimmy, buckle up for the ride. we're in week two of week 200. You know, this is, it might get quieter, you know, as we get deeper into it, and, you know, he becomes more sort of level-headed, or, you know, or consistent in messaging, or less widespread in his messaging. But what you've got going on in these first 2 weeks is a very strident president who is determined to deliver. And you know, I think that this is, you know, true to form, true to character. We shouldn't be surprised, and if anything, we should be settling in for 4 years of quite high levels of uncertainty.
From a South African perspective, what is kind of your threat assessment level? Where are we from a threat assessment level, understanding that tariffs could still be discussed, AGOA could still be brought up?
Yeah.
We have the Musk-Starlink angle to it all. How serious is the situation for South Africa, and how important is it for South Africa to then say, we're going to hold our ground as a sovereign state, but we're also going to maintain diplomatic relations if that is something we seek to do? Because understanding that threatening to cut funding to South Africa is effectively weaponizing your position as a government.
Look, a backdrop point that is really worth emphasizing here is the institutional economist Douglas North talks about the importance of institutional stability and frameworks. These are being challenged at many levels. You're talking about geopolitical implications, and you've used that term a couple of times. I think we need to be hypersensitive to the geopolitical implications. On this front, South Africa has very little firepower. And we really need to look at the positioning of the bigger houses, the bigger economies, most obviously India, China, to an extent Brazil, and then the whole of Europe, you know, what their positioning is on this. And what is interesting is, to my mind, what is interesting is the sequencing that Trump has initiated in the imposition of tariffs. Going for his neighbors first, and then the giant Chinese economy, what game theory tells us about this is the best way to respond in this type of inverted commas game is a tit for tat approach, and so I think what this ushers in is a geopolitical environment of tit for tat, and in those games there are seldom winners.
Seldom winners, a lot of losers, and even more that suffer as collateral damage. One has to wonder that if this is the position of Donald Trump to try and win over South Africa as an ally, did he not just do the opposite and push us further into the hands of BRICS? But that's a conversation for another day. Unfortunately, we don't have time to get into that conversation. Thank you so much, Prof, as always, for the time and for the insights. Professor Adrian Saville, Professor of Economics, Finance and Strategy at the Gordon Institute for Business Sciences, weighing in on the latest comments by President Donald Trump around South Africa.
My name is Frank Leonette, CEO and founder of South Africa's newest crypto exchange called Afridax. I will be on the MoneyWeb crypto podcast with Kieran Ryan to explain why we believe South Africa could benefit from a new crypto exchange and how we differ from the existing exchanges. Join us this week to find out more.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb crypto podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za. The MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The well-known mining indaba kicked off in Cape Town today with opening statements being made by our Minister of Mineral Resources. There's lots on the agenda to discuss this week at the indaba, and lots of prospective relationships to continue to be built there. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the talking points or the agenda items, hopefully, for the indaba. I'm joined on the line by the sustainability market lead for the UK and Ireland at DSS Plus, Federico Magalini, to take a look at this. Federico, thanks so much for taking the time. You're in attendance at the mining indaba, and today was the first day thereof. What was the mood like? What was the sense of conversation ahead of what I can only imagine is going to be a very busy week?
Yeah, for sure it will be. Well, I think there are two main elements that we can consider. Let's first start from the challenges, because it's clearly for the mining industry is facing at the moment challenging environment, and for many different reasons. The first one is, of course, geopolitical, and we know what's happening also with the discussion at global level on tariffs and other commercial trade tension. The second one is that people in the different rooms during the meeting clearly highlighted the importance of trying to improve the productivity of mining company that has been a little bit stagnating over the last couple of years in South Africa as well. And of course, we need to look into the persistence of injuries and fatalities that are unfortunately still paying a little bit the toll in the sector. There are major transformation happening in the sector as well, with merge and acquisition happening. And of course, every time we have merge and acquisition, companies need to transform. It's a new culture, new people, new procedures, new way of operating. And sometimes those are also slowing down a little bit production and profitability of operation themselves. And last but not least, when you look at the sustainability angle, there are, of course, requests for companies to improve their operation in terms of limiting, reducing their emission. The journey on decarbonization, looking for carbon neutrality, is started, but there is still room to improve and activities to be put in place. So I think that's the challenges side of the industry. But I also like to be positive and look at the different opportunities that the companies, the mining companies, have ahead of them. And I think the first one is that we all know that mining and the metals are integral part of what we need as society to progress, even in terms of decarbonization, adopting clean technology. Metals are fundamental part of this equation. And we know that the demand, it's high, and the supply is less at the moment than the demand. So metals improving the throughput, it's fundamental. And I think African mining company, they have also the chance, especially in high-tech sector, to play even a bigger role, even when we consider the tariffs and the limit to certain trade of metals. There is a huge opportunity for mining company to play a role that goes beyond the pure extraction and the refining of material. And you know that there are reports that has been recently published that can highlight how Africa can play a much bigger role when it comes, for instance, to the production of batteries and high-tech material for the clean mobility. Of course, this will bring, again, the topic of transformation, because companies will have to adapt to those new challenges. And definitely, it's important to keep an eye also on the opportunities associated to improvement of circularity and environmental performances of the company. So that's a little bit the few elements that were quite common today during the different panel and during the different sessions. And happy to, let's say, see how you, if you are particularly interested in deep diving into some of those topics, to explore further.
Frederico, I want to get a sense of what kind of lies ahead for the rest of the week. I mean, obviously you touched on a couple of things. There's going to be a lot of conversations around sustainability, around better mining practices, safer mining practices, and all of that. Are there other specific agenda items that have been tabled for this particular Indaba that might have either been carried through from previous Indabas or might be new to the participants this time around?
Well, the first one is circularity. That is definitely something that is becoming more and more prominent in the sector. We know recently also ICMM, so the Industry Association of Major Mining Company, published a report on that and guidance document for companies. So there is a demand. The demand is coming from different angles, from shareholder of the company, from the society, in some cases from some legal requirements. For mining company to adopt more sustainable practice in the way they extract and they process the material. And don't get me wrong, this is not just something we do for the environment. A lot of those practices can also improve the profitability of the companies, because you reduce the amount of waste you generate through operation, you reclaim some of the material from your waste, from the tailings, and all in all, you know, all the sustainability and circular economy practice will help companies to improve the profitability. So I think sustainability and circularity of mining operation is definitely high on the agenda of mining in Indaba, and we expect to see a lot of discussion around this. We also have a dedicated panel tomorrow on the topic. The other one is definitely the need to secure investment, and as I mentioned earlier, merge and acquisition is hot on the hot topic on the agenda of many investors, and of course associated with that we have the importance of ensuring that the integration of new assets is smooth and is not creating hiccup in the productivity of those companies. We know also from again from ICMM there is ongoing discussion on making the permit of new mines a little bit smoother, quicker. I mentioned earlier we need more metals. We are facing a deficit of supply, and if we look at the average time to put online a new mine, of course this is not enough. It's not fast enough to supply the metals that we need to develop, as I mentioned earlier, clean tech. So I think a reflection, especially government, on how fast can we be in making new mines available, up and running, it's definitely part of the conversation that we can expect in the next couple of days.
Mm.
Last but not least, maybe I would also mention very quickly the importance for mining company to really interact and work with the local communities and stakeholders, because this will make operations safer, more sustainable, and definitely will create a sense of belonging of community that are benefiting from the presence of mining companies.
Mm. Certainly sounds like a packed week ahead of the attendees at the mining in Durban. I think we'll have to leave the conversation there in the interest of time. Perhaps we'll catch up with the conversation later in the week as the Indaba continues to unfold. Thanks so much, Frederico, for those insights. Frederico Magalini, who is the sustainability and marketing lead at DSS Plus on the mining Indaba that's kicked off this week.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The independent board has approved the Barlow World takeover bid, the 23 billion rand bid that was put in by a consortium bidding to delist Barlow World. Looks to be going ahead, and I'm joined on the line by the consortium's spokesperson, Sydney Mhlari, to take a look at what this all means and where it all puts Barlow World as a business. Sydney, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. Obviously, a very big win for the consortium and for the efforts to put in this particular bid. I suppose congratulations are in order for the team and getting the deal over the line, so to speak. Where to from here?
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy and the listeners. Yes, the deal has reached a critical milestone, which is the distribution of the circular to the shareholders that happened sometime last week. And it's calling for a general meeting of the shareholders on the 26th of February to effectively vote on the transaction, whether it's a go or it's not a go by way of a scheme of arrangement.
Are we expecting that we are likely to see the transaction go through? I mean, I imagine everybody's hopeful that it goes through. The shareholders have already been shown what the post-deal would look like. But from a regulatory standpoint, and I suppose from a logistical and an administrative standpoint, I don't think we have any hiccups at this point. It'll go through its normal procedures, but are you envisioning any challenges at this point?
No, not at all. The document that was distributed, obviously the shareholders are currently going through it, and where there's queries, they're consulting their professional advisors with regard to that, which will guide them how to vote coming up. But beyond that, if you're looking beyond the actual vote itself, the transaction will still require regulatory approval in the form of the key one, Competition Commission approval. Again, we're not expecting major hiccups there, since there isn't much overlap between the buyer or the consortium together with the business. They are not in overlapping territories. A component of the buyer, which is Zahid, operates a similar business in Saudi Arabia, but the two businesses being Barlow World and that other business do not operate in any common territory.
Mm.
So we do not expect any major hiccups, but obviously we have to go through that regulatory process. As you know, the Competition Commission doesn't only look at competition, pure competition issues. They do look also at public interest issues,
mm.
which for this transaction, we think they're sufficiently covered The transaction does result essentially in a 51% black controlled industrial company of a major scale in South Africa. So from a public interest point of view, that is it's a positive. Mm. Additionally, you have broad-based participation in the form of the Barloworld Foundation, which remains invested. Barloworld Foundation was set up several years ago with a specific aim of benefiting communities, especially black women, who in its mandate, 60% of those benefits must flow to black women. Another component of the transaction is Barloworld Kulasiza, which has beneficiaries of circa 29,000, including ordinary members of the black public who bought shares in that property-owning company several years ago. So that structure remains and will be retained even in Barloworld's unlisted form.
Mm. Sydney, without compromising, obviously, the current position of the deal and what's still to come, are you able to shed some light on what the future plans could potentially look like, understanding, of course, that they might be subject to change once all of the I's have been dotted and all the T's have been crossed, what this now means for Barloworld as a business, what it means for your investment strategy or the direction that the business is going to be going in? I mean, the moment a business goes and delists, we often don't see a lot around that business, but Barloworld, I imagine, is still a key player in the South African and the global ecosystem as well.
Yeah, perhaps there are several points to address in your point. One is the strategy. As set out in the circular, part of the attraction for the buying consortium, more so the foreign shareholder in Zahid, is that they're very supportive of the management strategy that has been unfolding over the past few years. It's essentially that strategy that attracted them so much so that they became a shareholder several years ago and now they're part of a consortium taking the company private. So they remain very supportive as to, you know, do you fix what you have? Do you optimize what's not working very well? And how do you grow into other areas and grow the profitability? Grow profitably the business. The other one is geography and location. The consortium committed that that's not changing. The company will remain a domiciled South African company, retain the name, and there certainly will be no disruption from its employment practices or even labor. As I mentioned before, that there are no overlapping areas between the two businesses such that you can derive any synergies which result in any job losses. So from that point of view, that bit is not changing.
Well, we wish you the best of luck in getting all of the administrative work out of the way. This big step that has been concluded here is that board approval, and we hope to see that the transaction goes through without any major hiccups from this perspective. We'll leave the conversation there, Sydney. Thanks so much for the insights and for the time. Sydney Mhlari, who is the bidding spokesperson for the buying consortium that just put in that bid to buy out and delist Barloworld.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's another Monday. It's another tech feature. We've been doing these tech features since the start of the new year, the new month, part of our kind of expansion into looking at new things. And we've got our resident tech journalist joining us to take a look at some of the latest developments and happenings in the world of tech. I'm joined on the line by Nafisa Akabor, who is a tech journalist, but also the founder of Recharged.co.za, to take a look at quite an interesting innovation from the team at Apple. Good evening, Nafisa. Thanks so much for taking the time. Always lovely to chat to you. What is Apple looking to do? I see they're launching new AirPods, but there's a special feature around the AirPods. What's going on here?
Hi, Jimmy. Great to be back. Yes, so Apple actually last year announced this groundbreaking feature on the AirPods Pro 2 specifically that turns it into a pair of hearing aids, which is remarkable. As we know, hearing aids are very expensive, and these pair of AirPods costs 5,500 rand, I think, and you get them either in a Lightning or USB-C. After a simple free software update on your iPhone or iPad, it could be paired with either. You take a hearing test, and then you follow the prompts to use it as a hearing aid if a hearing test tells you that you do need to use it as a hearing aid.
That's quite a remarkable thing, because, I mean, the hearing side of conversations is a very sensitive conversation. I mean, different people have different hearing impairments. I think about this because I've got my own personal experiences with those that have got hearing impairments. How do you then combine tech with health tech, so to speak? This is effectively what we're calling it, I suppose, is health tech, to create a product that then services a need but also still remains part of your original product offering. I mean, I can imagine they're not intending for this to replace their existing products.
No, of course not. I mean, nobody saw it coming, well, at least not me. I actually own these AirPods, and it was such a surprise, an interesting thing to note that the new software update will be rolling out and bringing it to me. I mean, I think it's great that Apple is going this route, but who knows whether they won't. I don't see them becoming a health tech company, but they also do have smartwatch, the very popular Apple Watch. I mean, as do other companies have their own smartwatches, which already also tracks health features. So maybe, yeah, this could be like a new, perhaps, industry, because we know AirPods alone is such a profitable from Apple.
Navisa, is this practical from a consumer point of view, right? So you touched on the cost earlier, and I'm wondering, if we're aiming to make these products kind of more accessible, is it right to kind of have them at the price point that we have them at? Or are we saying, look, these are still AirPods, it's just that they have an added feature to them? How do you balance the price side of it as a manufacturer with, well, what we would assume is you wanting to change the lives of other people?
Yeah, so Apple calls them clinical grade hearing aids. They don't specifically say, hey, these are hearing aids, but they obviously offer such good quality. And they don't, so from what I read, I'm no expert, hearing aids are a bit expensive. They're nowhere near like 5,500 rand. So in terms of cost alone, for people in this country who do need hearing aids, this actually might be an attractive price point to use it, because I know certain people in my family who don't, they feel a bit shy. They don't want to actually wear it. They don't want to go for the test. They don't want to be that person walking around with a hearing aid. So maybe it will help people. And I mean, across any age, not to say that you have to be elderly to wear them. It could also make people more susceptible, sort of wanting to get tested and wear AirPods rather, because you're still walking around, you're still listening to your music, it enhances all those features. So maybe it will help people accept their condition.
Navisa, what about everyday things? I mean, if the AirPods are linked to a device and you're expecting a call, that kind of makes sense that it would enhance that call quality and the hearing element there. But from a hearing aid perspective, can I just walk around with these AirPods in, set to the right settings or frequency or whatever it is, not play any music and be able to hear the outside world? Or are they only going to really work with my Apple device?
No, yes. Firstly, you do need an iOS device to pair it to, but yes, it can be worn without listening to music, because there are settings on the app, and Apple says it also helps you some preventative stuff. So if the environment around you is too loud, it sort of regulates it or brings it back to something that's acceptable. So it's not, you're not going higher than a certain amount of decibels or what's accepted for your ears. Like, I know with my Apple Watch, when I'm in a noisy environment, it'll beep and say, hey, like, listen, you're in a noisy environment, it's above 90 decibels. So yeah, it does help with a normal situation.
That sounds like an interesting way to approach health tech as well, to just say, we're going to look after your overall wellness as a service provider because you use our products. Is there more that we're seeing coming out in the health tech space? Are we seeing kind of other companies do something similar, or even think about health in a different way?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of smartwatches. I wear one, but I do know it's also, some people think it's ugly. So now we're seeing smart rings come, and Samsung, their Galaxy Ring is actually going to launch next month, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it's great that it's giving consumers the power to monitor and be proactive about their health, even if you never cared about it. I mean, COVID taught us a lot. People want to monitor their blood oxygen rate, their sleep stats. They want to know when they're stressed out. So it's actually great to wear these devices, whether you prefer a watch or a ring. It actually doesn't matter, whatever suits you. And then you'll just get notifications, and sometimes they're now being built together with AI to offer you ways to improve. So firstly, you will get notified, hey, there's a change in pattern. This is what I get on my watch. It tells me your vitals are a bit low. Maybe you need to check it, you know? So then I'm aware. And then also I realized when it did tell me that I was feeling a bit under the weather and I didn't realize maybe I was flu-y, maybe I needed to slow down. So I think these gadgets are great for people who just want to be more proactive and be preventative about anything in the future that could be worse.
Certainly an interesting future we are headed for, especially one where tech starts to meet with your health needs and everything in between. Folks, if you want to check out the step-by-step guide on how to turn these AirPods into a hearing aid, or how to enable the hearing aid functionality, Nafisa's written quite a good article on her website, recharge.co.za. It's got a step-by-step guide on how to make use of this feature. Probably very useful if you are thinking about it. Nafisa, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Always lovely to catch up with you. Always great to get the tech news first from you before we try and see it out in the public space. We'll leave the conversation there. Thanks so much, Nafisa. Nafisa Akabor, tech journalist and founder at recharge.co.za, on the latest innovative feature from Apple on their AirPods Pro.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we wrap things up on a Monday with a personal finance segment, as we do every Monday. This week, we're taking a look at the difference between good debt and bad debt. I'm not sure if there is good debt out there, given the landscape that we currently find ourselves in, but we seem to have an expert on that, and that is the senior program manager at Old Mutual, Thabo Hollo, who joins me on the line now to take a look at this debt phenomenon and see if we can understand it better. Good evening, Thabo. Thanks so much for taking the time. How do we even start to understand what is good debt and what is bad debt?
Good evening, firstly, Jimmy, and thanks for the opportunity. Look, yes, debt is not all bad. Yeah, it does sound horrible when you say it's not that bad. But let's look at the reality. The reality is, I might need to start some business and I don't have adequate capital to start my own business on a corner. There's nothing wrong with raising debt and funding that business, so long as you know that it's going to be a profitable business. So you there is some categories of debt that can be easily categorized as good debt. Investment is such an example, and including investing in yourself. If you want to pay some school fees and you don't have hard cash on yourself, there is nothing wrong with going to a bank and say, look, can I have some student loan or study loans or something like that. So in a broad sense, good debt is the money that you can borrow from somebody else, right, and use that to, one, either invest in yourself or invest in a business for a particular return.
So good debt enhances something and bad debt doesn't necessarily do that, doesn't necessarily solve that problem. How do we look at debt from a long-term perspective? Because a lot of the debt, I mean, you gave the example of a business and the example of life, things happening. And I'm thinking about things like buying a house, buying a car. Some of those big ticket items are long-term debt situations. How do you identify that this long-term thing I want to get into is good for me, or this long-term thing could have some really nasty effects on my life because of how long the debt is going to be on the books for?
No, absolutely. It's something that accumulates in value. In its simplest form is, if you were to take in debt, you'd ideally want a debt that would generate some sort of return. If you look at the house, for instance, ideally you want to buy a house that would accumulate in value over time, such that the asset debt then outweighs the liability debt. So there'll always be that gap between what you owe and what you can get in return. So the longer you have it, in the long run, it should be able to give you something in return. On the other hand, if you have a long-term debt of some sort, that necessarily does not give you anything. That clearly should be categorized as a bad debt, whether it's a revolving credit of some sort, maybe a credit card that you are not paying anytime soon, but you don't see any returns in particular out of it. That you can categorize as a bad debt. However, if you take that even if it's a long-term debt, but there is some form of return to it, there is some sort of value add to it, or some sort of accumulation or building of wealth out of it, then necessarily you can categorize that as good debt.
Tabo, what about unnecessary debts? What does that look like? Well, how do we even, I mean, unnecessary seems like such a harsh word, but in some cases, when we look at some of the debt, there's this category of debt where you're like, yeah, but you didn't need that thing.
Absolutely. And it's precisely that, right? Is the debt that you actually, if you think about it, you actually do not need it, right? Yes, you might need a pair of shoes, but I'm not sure if buying a pair of 5,000 rands worth of sneakers on debt is necessarily a good idea.
Mara, you only live once, Tabo.
Yes, you absolutely live once, but have fun whilst you live in there. There is a clear indication, Jimmy, that there is a link between bad personal finance management and mental health, or even physical health. So do you want to live long and an unpleasant life just because you only live once? Yes, you only live once, but there's nothing better than living once and enjoying that life. Mm. Live within your means, that's what I say.
Mm.
So don't make, that can be your friend. Eh? You can use that in a friend and it can help you. But at the same time, that can be your worst enemy.
Mm.
You don't want to get to a stage where debt runs your life instead of you managing your own debt.
Speaking of debt running your life, according to a money stress tracker, around 53% of South Africans are dedicating more than 40% of their take-home income to debt repayments. That surely doesn't sound like living the best life. And I guess for some South Africans, a lot of it is unavoidable debt. So in as much as I don't want it, and as much as I understand that it's bad debts, it is unavoidable because of the circumstances. I have to take it because of the situation I'm put in. In that situation, how do I then start to engineer the debt to then work for me? How do I then start to make that shift from taking it from a negative to a positive?
Let's start with unavoidable debt, firstly, right? If we as South Africans, and I know it might be difficult, right? Learn to live within our means. That's the first thing that we need to get right. Knowing to differentiate a very simple thing between the needs and the wants, right? This is what I want, and I'm willing to save for it, or I'm willing to defer it for the future. This is what I need. It's something that I absolutely cannot live without, the food, shelter, and the likes of that. But there's things that we need to plan for. We as South Africans, South Africans are notorious for conspicuous consumption. We like using debt to buy things that would make us feel good, but don't necessarily in a long term work well for us. But we are where we are. We know that we've over indebted ourselves. We dug ourselves into it. There are strategies to get debt. But the first thing we need to learn, Jimmy, is to face up to that debt. It's amazing how many of us are scared to even look at our credit report, because we've messed up that much. But in order for us to get out of that debt, the first thing that we need to do is go to that very same credit report and say, how bad is the situation? And once you understand how bad it is the situation, sit with experts and say, here am I. I've dug myself into this hole. Please help me out. And believe you me, most of the lenders are not in the business of running you down, right? Most of them want their money back. They would be keen to sit with you, work out some sort of a payment plan, work out some sort of a strategy. There are financial coaches out there. There are financial counselors out there who would say, look, let me sit with you. Let's work this thing through and let's help you get out of the situation. But the first things first is, if you can avoid it, rather avoid it and live within your means. Stick to that budget, stick to your plans and live within your means.
Mm. And confront the realities if you are in that situation. Tabo, before I let you go, I want to look at the positives and the good debt that we touched on a little earlier in the conversation. Yeah. If I have the opportunity to take on some good debt or some debt that I can make use of in a positive light, how do I make the most of that? How do I, from day one, say, I've taken this particular piece of debt on for the purposes of it being good debt?
Firstly, let's stick to what we can afford. The challenge is, even if you want to start a business, right, you drop a business, a solid business plan, and you go to a lender and say, look, I need money, and they give you X amount in terms of the money that you qualify for. The money that you qualify for does not necessarily mean you have to take the entire amount. So if your business, for instance, needs 300K and you can bootstrap with another 15K from your own savings, etc., etc. The fact that they say you qualify for 1 million does not necessarily mean you have to take the million. So take on the debt that you can afford, whether it's home loan, even in a home loan situation, or a car financing, maybe using that car to go to work to generate income in one way or the other. The fact that you qualify for a million rand car loan does not necessarily mean you have to take that. So even within the category of a good debt, right, still try to function within your means, right? And understand what you're going to use that funds for, and try as much as you possibly can to repay that as diligently and as quickly as possible.
Certainly lots to think about from a debt perspective. We'll have to leave the conversation there because it's just gone 7 o'clock. Thabo, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Thabo Hollo, who is the senior program manager at Old Mutual on good versus bad debt. As I said, it's gone 7 o'clock. Greg Kos is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.